All right, here we are. Welcome to the Stronger Stride podcast. Thank you once again for tuning in, joining us, putting us in your ear holes today. You are here with Sophie Lane, and I'm going to talk to you all about why zone 2 training is ruining your progress. Now, I know that sounds dark. I know that sounds negative, pessimistic. It's not our usual vibe. Maybe it's clickbait. Who knows? You're about to find out. Hang around and all will be revealed. But before we get into the nitty gritty, I'm going to give you a couple of updates on what's been happening. When this comes out, it should be about the 17th. Is that right? Yep. Oh, it's St. Paddy's Day, 17th of March. Happy St. Paddy's Day to all that celebrate. Updates from me are, it will be the Backyard Ultra this weekend in Sydney. I'm not running it. Surprise, surprise. I was tempted. I feel like that could be a good option at some point, but not currently, but hoping to get down there and supporting. There's a couple of people, I mean, I'm sure there's heaps of people who are running it, so good luck to you if you're currently, 24 hours in at least. Hope you're having a good time. Hopefully I'm out there cheering for you. Some other things that are coming up, we are now 3 weeks, maybe, just over 3 weeks away from Canberra Half Marathon. I am planning maybe on organising a little catch up on the Saturday. So if you're going to be around for the Canberra Marathon Festival, let me know, send me a message on Instagram if you'll be around in the morning. I'm thinking a little shakeout run and some coffee and little catch up. But yeah, let me know if you'll be around. Otherwise, maybe we could do dinner on the Saturday night or something like that, just to, you know, really soak in the atmosphere and make the most of the weekend. What else is happening? Oh, we still have a few hats left. If you're keen for a hat, send us a message. There are a couple saved left for just you. You listening right now, one has your name on it. There's a link in our bio, and if I remember, there'll be a link in the show notes to this episode if you would like one. A couple of episodes that are coming out. We've got Jamie from the Flame Bearers talking all about women, Olympians and Paralympians, and the struggles that they go through and the triumphs that they achieve. We also have Joanna Garten, who is an author, talking about her new book coming out in a few weeks as well, and some other ones that are yet to be released and announced to the world, so stay tuned. I don't know if we've already said it, but there's a potential Olympian coming on the show very soon, so get excited for that. If you have any guest recommendations, or if you yourself listening right now feel like you've got something to share, if you've got a story to tell us, if you've got something fun to chat about, or something inspiring, or something insightful, then let us know. We are always open to guests of all varieties, abilities, and interest areas. So hit us up. Anyway, that is enough rambling from me. I'm going to continue rambling, but on the actual topic for today, which is why zone 2 training is ruining your performance. So firstly, before we get into it, what is zone 2 training? I'm not going to go too deep into this because I have chatted about it in prior episodes. There was one episode, I'm sure I did, on training zones, all of the training zones. We've done some episodes on lactate threshold and VO2 max. So if I remember, I will link those below so you can check through and get a bit more, I guess, background knowledge and understanding on what we're going to go through today. But I'm not going to waste a heap of time on it. But I'm sure you're all doing zone 2 training. I'm sure you've all heard about it. I'm sure you've read about it. You've seen about it on TikTok or Instagram. It is all the rage at the moment, which is a good thing, despite the title of this show. So zone 2 training basically is our easy, comfortable training zone. If we're looking at a 5-zone model, which is generally what people are referring to when they're referring to this zone 2, we've got 5 zones. 1 being very easy, 1 being easy, which is zone 2, 3 being moderate, 4 being hard, 5 being maximum. So if we're looking at that 5-zone model, we're talking about zone 2, which is our easy zone. There is also a 3-zone model, which has zone 1, 2, and 3, which does confuse things slightly, because the zone 2 in that situation is very different physiologically than in the 5-zone model. But in general, in the media, social media, whatever, most people are speaking about the 5-zone model. So that's what we'll speak about today. So it's our easy, comfortable, chatty, social-paced running. This is the fun stuff. It's the stuff that you can do for hours and hours on end. You don't feel like you're working too hard, and it should be relatively comfortable. Now, the good thing is a lot of people are getting into this a bit more. A lot of people are letting go of their ego a little bit and they are a little bit more open to running at a slower pace. I still think there's a lot of work to do for a lot of us in this area though, and I still think a lot of people are held back by fear of judgment or fear of the lack of kudos on Strava or whatever it is, and they're still running a little bit too quick. So if we want to run zone two, we need to make sure it's comfortable. You should be able to hold a conversation or sing a song and feel comfortable at that pace. Now, the issue that we're going to speak about today is if you're purely running at zone two, always, every single run, all the time, zone two, heart rate's low, you're chatting every run, you're probably having a great time, which is fantastic. And I don't want to take that away from you. But in order to improve your performance, in order to get faster, in order to increase your lactate threshold, in order to get some PBs, I think it's going to be really helpful to also spend some time running a little bit faster. Now, I don't want this to get convoluted and confused. I am definitely not saying every run you do should be fast. I'm not even saying most of your runs that you do should be fast. I am agreeing with the consensus that is out there in the media and in the research that we should be following roughly the 80-20 rule, the polarized training model. If you haven't heard of it, basically we want to be spending 80% of our time in our comfortable, easy zone 2 training zone and 20% of our time in the harder, higher up thresholds, zone 4, zone 5, maybe zone 3, depending on what you're reading. Okay? So I am on board with that camp. I am not saying zone 2 is bad. I am all for zone 2. I think it's so important for injury mitigation, hopefully some prevention potentially. I think it's so important for enjoyment and socialization and being able to chat to people. I think it's so great for sustainability, longevity, for your ability to run for a long time, to back up training sessions, to recover better. I think it's fantastic. But what I think a lot of people are now focusing too much on is just purely zone 2 training. And when you're ready to take it to that next level, when you're ready to start improving, when you're ready to get that next PB, you've got to run fast. To run fast, you need to run fast. I think some of us are genetically gifted and talented and we can just run easy. And when I say we, I'm definitely not speaking about myself. They can run easily and fine and not really have to try too hard, and then they can just suddenly do a race and they run really fast. But for a lot of us, mere mortals and amateurs, that doesn't come so easy to us. So putting in some time and effort in those higher zones, I think, can be really valuable. Now, the caveat to that, as I just spoke about with zone 2, it is a little bit more safe. There is less risk involved with our easier running. I'm not saying that it's risk-free, and I'm not saying that if you just do zone 2, you're never going to get injured. But what we do know is that faster running does involve higher loads, puts more strain on the body. It requires more output and force. Therefore, our muscles, tendons, ligaments, tissues, bones go under more stress and strain. So we need to be really mindful with this faster work, how we're adding it in, when we're adding it in, how much of it we're doing, how hard we're running, all of that. And I know anecdotally when I've been coaching people, they get quite fearful of interval sessions and speed running and tempo runs and fast runs, because often people will go from they're new to running or they've just been doing some jogging, and then they go to an interval session or they try and do a run that's faster or they do a race and then suddenly they're injured, which is really scary and confronting and would put you off from wanting to do that kind of thing again. So in this episode today, I'm going to be talking you through how to implement some faster running in a safe manner in order to progress and improve and increase your performance, but in a safe way that's not going to increase your risk of injury too much. Of course, with any change, there's always an increased risk. If you change your running shoes, if you change your running surface, or if you change your speed or your frequency or your volume, there's always an inherent risk of injury. So any change is always risky, but I'm going to try and encourage you and educate you on the safest, most simple way to introduce some speed. Before we get into that practical logistical element, I'm going to talk to you about why running fast is actually important. Why does it matter? And why can't we just run easy all the time? So what I want to start with before we get too far into the research is just setting a little bit of the tone, setting the tone for today. When we look at the research for the distribution of our training intensity or any real running or endurance training, studies, a lot of it is done on elite athletes. A lot of it is done with high level, Olympic level athletes, marathon runners who are training 10 to 13 times a week. Now, I'm assuming if you're listening to this podcast, you're probably recreational, you're probably amateur, you're probably pretty average. I'm sorry to break it to you, but if you're listening to this and you're an Olympian, please let us know, because that's really cool. I mean, if you're average and you're listening, also let us know, because that's equally as cool. But what I'm saying is, for majority of us who are here listening today, I'm assuming we're not all training 10 to 13 times per week. If you are, hats off to you. If you're not, also, that's okay. What we need to consider is, when this research is done, it's done on these people who are training so much. And if you're only training, sorry, I shouldn't say only, if you are training 3 times per week, 2 of your runs are easy runs and 1 of your runs is a hard interval session, then it's mathematically impossible for you to do 80% of your training easy and 20% hard, unless you broke down all of the minutes in your runs and separated them and did some complicated maths that I don't understand. But basically what I'm saying is, if you've got 2 runs per week that are easy, that's 66% of your training, then you've got 33% of your training that's hard. So don't stress, don't worry if you're not hitting this 80-20 rule exactly. It's very similar to the 180 cadence, the 180 steps per minute number that we hear about. That is not a blanket rule. That is not a prescribed number that we all need to hit. That was an average number found from an average number of elite athlete marathon runners, which we aren't. So same thing with that 180 cadence. You don't need to be there. You also don't need to be at 80-20. It's not a golden rule. It's the average from an elite population. Don't stress if you're 60-30 or 60-40 or 70-30 or 50-50 for that matter. Your priority is, as an amateur recreational athlete, your priority is to enjoy your training. If you're not enjoying your training, you need to take a moment, take a step back, and figure out what you're doing and why you're doing it. Is there a way that you can manipulate your training throughout the week so that you can make it more enjoyable? Because it needs to be fun. Of course, there are health benefits and we should all be exercising, even if we don't want to. That's a different chat. But if you're choosing to run as your mode of exercise, you want to be enjoying it. So don't stress if you're not hitting these targets that are set by the elite runners. Cool. All right. I'm glad we clarified that. So what I'd like to chat about is, why should we be running hard? I think a lot of us understand why we should be running easy. And if you're not sure, check out the podcast I've linked below. But in general, that zone 2 running is really good because we get a nice aerobic base. We get some really good changes in our efficiency in terms of our mitochondria, which is part of our cell, makes things more efficient. We're able to improve our stroke volume and our cardiac output, which are parts of our heart rate and the amount of blood that's being pumped around our body. It's really good for longevity and health. So if you're someone who runs for your health only, and you run because you know it's good for you and you want the benefits in terms of cardiovascular, respiratory changes, maybe some muscular changes, metabolic health, then that is fantastic. And go to town with zone 2. Every day, all day, whatever, zone 2 is your jam and that's great. I would argue there's some benefits to you doing some faster stuff, but what we're really focusing on today are those people who want to take it to the next level. They want to start going a little bit quicker and they're not sure how to do that. If you're just happy to plod along and do your jogs and enjoy it and love it and that's what you want to do, keep doing your zone 2 training. But if you want something extra, we want to start adding in some hard running. Why should we do that? So we know why zone 2 is good. Why is anything faster than zone 2 or harder than zone 2 important? Why does it make a difference? Why can't we just do zone 2 running? So what we start to get when we push into those next zones, into zone 3 and zone 4, is we start to improve our ability to tolerate and utilize lactate. So a little bit of a brief overview, again, more details below. Basically, at rest, we've got a little bit of lactate just floating around our bloodstream, okay? Somewhere between 0 to 1, maybe up to 2 millimoles of lactate in our blood when we're at rest. When we start to exercise, that lactate increases slowly when we're at our really low zones. So when we're just starting to walk, we're just starting to jog, we're in zone 1, we start to be in zone 2. This lactate's being produced, but it's also being utilized and it's being cleared at a very similar rate. Or often if we're at a really low intensity, the lactate's getting cleared faster than it's being produced. So we're keeping that really nice low lactate. once we start to push beyond this boundary, when we're no longer jogging, when we're running a little bit faster, when we're getting a little bit out of breath, we're getting a little bit puffed, we're working a bit harder, we're working up a sweat, our lactate is continuing to be produced as we are requiring more energy. So we need more glucose, we need more energy to fuel the effort that we're putting out. We're putting in more effort now, so we need more from our body. Therefore, more lactate is produced. As this happens, we begin to reach what we call our lactate threshold. So our lactate is hovering around that 2 millimoles. We're relatively comfortable. We start to move up towards 3 millimoles. Things are getting a little bit harder. Once we get to about 4 millimoles, we've reached our lactate threshold physiologically, which basically means if we go beyond this, if we continue pushing harder, running faster beyond this point, it becomes really hard for us to maintain that intensity because there is more lactate getting produced than our body is able to clear. So the lactate accumulates really quickly and we see this exponential increase in lactate. That's really hard to maintain. So we can do that effort for a shorter time, but we can't sustain it for as long as we can with our zone 2 training. So that's a little overview of lactate. Now, the reason that running faster is good is because it gets us used to and it gets us better at clearing this lactate faster, being more efficient at utilizing that lactate so that we can run at a faster pace for longer. Okay, I'm just taking a second to let that sink in. Coming back to that a little bit. So when we are running a little bit quicker, we're producing more lactate. If we can get our body used to working at that intensity where the lactate is creeping up a little bit, but we're still able to clear it at a reasonable rate, our body is going to become more efficient. Human bodies are really, really adaptable and they're really good at improving themselves for their next challenge. So say, for example, you go for a run, you've got some new shoes on, you get a blister. Your skin then heals. You might get a callus, you might get harder skin, you'll get more layers of skin or thicker skin over that area, so that when you run again in those new shoes next week, your body has adapted. It's got a bit of a coping mechanism. It's a little bit stronger than it was last time because it knows what it needs to do to handle what it went through last time. It knows that, oh, last time that really hurt, we damaged ourselves. Let's put a little bit more extra padding, a little bit more reinforcements in that area so that next time this person puts us through this again, we'll be more ready for that and we'll be able to handle that load. Very similar with our lactate threshold or our fitness. When we do something that's hard, our body works really hard, we then recover if we're allowing ourselves to have enough time to sleep and rest and heal and recover. We're then coming back again the next day or the next week or the next month doing that same thing again or doing something slightly harder, but this time around our body is more prepared because it's made adaptations, it's made physiological changes so that it is more better suited and better prepared for this next bout of exercise. By running purely zone 2, purely easy running, we're not exposing our body to that more challenging environment. So we're not allowing our body to adapt in that way. We're still getting plenty of really nice adaptations in terms of our aerobic capacity and our endurance building and our longevity. It's great for our heart, all those kind of things. But we are missing that piece of improving our ability to endure, improving our ability to withstand challenging things, withstand hard things. We're not getting our body used to working at a high intensity. So then when we turn up to race day and we want to run fast, we want to reach our limits, we don't have much of a ceiling to push towards. We've got this really nice base and we can go all day, but we aren't able to raise that ceiling and really push into those harder intensities. And if we do, we're not able to maintain it for very long. So hopefully that gives you a bit of understanding as to why higher intensities might be useful for you physiologically. What they're also good at doing is simply just getting us faster, getting our body used to running faster, which I've just sort of explained what happens in at a cellular level. But physically, biomechanically, getting our body used to moving better, moving more efficiently, moving in a more optimal way. When we're jogging, when we're doing zone 2 running, it's probably really common for us to end up in this kind of shuffle movement pattern. We're plodding along, we're not getting heaps of hip extension, we're not getting much knee drive. We might be walking a little bit as well, depending on where our fitness is at that intensity. We might be walking, we might be jogging, we might be stopping for breaks, we might be chatting, we might be running with a friend, so we're not running at our kind of optimal pace anyway. So we don't really get the same physical benefit in terms of our biomechanics and our technique we're kind of just training our body to be able to be efficient. We're training our body to move consistently over a long period of time, but we're not really training it to move well or to move optimally. I think running drills, running technique is something that's really overlooked and kind of just skipped for a lot of people. There's pros and cons to it, right? Running is so accessible and you can just run and not have to think about it too much. You don't have to learn how to run in the same way that you have to learn how to pole vault, you know? Running comes naturally to us, which is fantastic. But I do think there are kind of better ways we could move. There are more efficient ways we could move that we often don't think about. So running faster is a really good opportunity to teach your body how to move well. Even if you're not necessarily being coached or being taught how to move or being given cues, in order to run fast, you'll have to move more efficiently and you'll have to get your body into better positions than you would when you're plodding along. So it's kind of innately there. It's happening without you even really thinking about it. When you're running fast, if someone took a video of you going for your zone 2 easy long runs, especially towards the end of that run, versus you doing a 400 meter interval at the track, if you put them side to side, I'm sure the mechanics are going to be very different and the faster one is going to look a lot better. Now, I'm not expecting you to run your marathon with the same technique that you would run a 400. We need to kind of conserve our energy when we're doing that longer running. So we need to be more conservative with how we move. We're not going to drive our knee so high. We're not going to kick our leg back so high. We're not going to swing our arms as high when we're doing a marathon because we're wasting energy. But if we can teach our body how to move really well when we're doing shorter, faster efforts, then we should have a bit of carryover for our longer efforts in terms of what I always try and encourage people is if we exaggerate our movement. So if we move really well, if we focus on our arm swing moving really well, if we focus on that hip extension, that knee drive, landing our foot underneath our hip, those movements, then hopefully a little bit of that will come over to our longer, slower running without us really having to think about it too much. Because you don't want to be out in a race and constantly trying to think about your form or changing your technique or focusing too much on anything other than just, you know, getting to the finish line. So if we can do these shorter runs, I think it's really great for our technique and form and something that's really important, even if it was just doing some drills or some strides, not even a full interval session, but just getting your body used to moving better, I think is great. The third reason I think running hard is good, so we've got lactate threshold improvements there. We've got purely just moving better, getting faster and getting your body used to moving more optimally. I think number three is our race simulation. I think exposing ourselves to conditions, environments, intensities that are similar to what we will experience on race day is a really nice way for us to get more comfortable or more familiar with that sensation, I should say. So when you're in a race and it starts to get hard, it won't be the first time that you've experienced that. You would have experienced that similar sensation in training, maybe not to the same extent or maybe not for the same duration, but you would be familiar with that sensation and therefore you won't freak out so much and you'll be able to hold on a little bit longer. Something that I learned from Tim and that you would have heard from Tim Locke's episode a few weeks ago is that these things are fun when we accept that they're going to be challenging. If we can expose our bodies to more challenging environments and challenging intensities prior to the race is going to be even more fun because we know what to do when those hard moments come up and it's not such a shock to the system. So I think running a little bit faster, doing some harder sessions and intervals, which we'll talk about how to actually do a bit later, is really helpful to simulate that race environment and get you used to and prepared to pushing yourself and to working towards those PBs. Number four, the final reason I think running is hard, there are so many, but we're going to keep it precise today, is for the fun, for the challenge, for the variety. I think running is quite a monotonous thing, especially if you're running by yourself, especially if you don't live in a very beautiful place or you don't explore other areas. If you're just running the same place by yourself all the time, it can be quite monotonous. And part of that is quite relaxing. Part of that is quite nice and enjoyable. And there is definitely something really special about that that a lot of other things don't have. But if you want to spice it up a bit, if you're feeling like you're hitting a plateau, if you're getting a bit bored or training's feeling a little bit dull, running a little bit faster, doing some interval sessions is a really nice way to add some variety and just a different type of stimulus for your training. All right, so hopefully by now you are pretty familiar with what zone 2 is, you're pretty familiar with what those harder zones are and why we should start to implement them. Now we can start to talk about a little bit more of the fun, practical stuff. How do we actually implement these techniques? How does this actually look with our training? How do we run fast but make sure that we do it in a sustainable way that is as low risk as possible? So, as always, there are a couple of different options, and I'm sure there are many options that I won't mention today, but the audience that I'm hoping I'm speaking to are relatively new runners or those who are a little bit less familiar with this style of training. If you're someone who's been doing hard interval sessions for a while, this might not be as relevant for you and you might be a little bit more advanced or beyond this point. It may be a good refresher and you might still learn a few things, but the people that I'm really speaking to now are more on that beginner side of this spectrum. So if you've got a really nice solid base, so making sure that before we get into any of this fast stuff, we've spent a good few months, ideally 6 months, a year, as long as possible, building a really nice solid foundation of our zone 2 easy running. You've spent a lot of time jogging, your body's now a little bit more tolerant to this load, it can handle X amount of kilometers per week at an easy pace, and you've been doing that for a long time, you're sustaining that, maintaining it, everything's going well. From here, we can start to implement a few different options in terms of introducing our faster running. Now, there are two kind of ways that I would look at going about this. Number one, introducing some tempo-paced runs. Now, what is tempo pace? Again, check out the episode below. But basically, what we're talking about here is that next zone above zone 2. So it's zone 3, tempo pace. It's a little bit harder now. It's a little bit faster, but it's not a sprint. It's not max effort. So what you can start to think about is when you're doing your easy runs, you're having a really nice, comfortable conversation. You're chatting away. You're taking a few extra breaths than you would be at rest, but it's nothing more beyond that. When we start to go into this next zone, tempo pace, zone 3, our breathing will start to be a bit more labored. We'll start to be a little bit more puffed. We'll still be able to talk, but just not in full chatty conversational mode without much extra effort. Okay, we can say some sentences, we can put a few words together, but we're not just having lengthy paragraphs of conversation back and forth without needing those extra breaths in between words. Okay, so it's a little bit faster now, but it's not max pace. So the reason for introducing this in the early phases, rather than just going straight into, you know, some 400 meter repeats or some VO2 max pace efforts, is because it's a really nice way to train your body to start to tolerate and handle a little bit more intensity without overwhelming the body. We know that we often do things too fast, too soon, too often, too much. So if we can limit those variables by just slightly increasing our intensity, slightly increasing our pace, we're going to minimize that risk. So how does this actually work? Let's say, for example, you are someone who at the moment is running 4 times a week and you're just doing easy jogging. You might have a longer run on the weekend. You might have a moderate run in terms of distance during the week, and then 2 shorter easy runs. They're all easy pace, all comfortable, and you're looking to introduce some speed. So how would we do this? Let's say we've got those 4 easy runs, and let's take one of those shorter runs during the week and introduce some tempo pace in the form of intervals. So for example, if at the moment you're currently doing a 30-minute run on a Thursday that's easy, let's break that up into 10 minutes at the start, still at that easy pace, 10 minutes at the end that's also at that easy pace, but now let's introduce, for example, 2 minutes at our tempo pace with a 1 minute rest times 3 in the middle of this 30-minute run. Okay, so we're just starting to expose ourselves. We've only got 9 minutes there of, if that's the correct maths, I think so, 3 by 3. 9 minutes of slightly faster intensity. So it's not a huge volume. It won't be such a big shock to the system, because we need to remember that every minute we spend at a higher intensity is so much more load than what we would spend at the same duration at a lower intensity. So 1 minute of easy running is not equivalent to 1 minute of hard running. And this is why looking purely at things like your Strava graph with your kilometers is not the best judgment of your actual training load, because it's not considering the effort or the intensity. Using something like a TRIMP score, which is basically timesing the minutes by an RPE scale, is a much better way at looking at your overall training load and making sure that we are accounting for any changes in speed. Because what we will tend to do as runners is get really hooked on these numbers, get really obsessed with the objective data, and not consider the quality of those runs. And we might look at our training, for example, sticking with this person running four times a week, let's say that that is adding up to 50 kilometers for the week. They then start to introduce some speed work. We don't want to then continue also increasing our duration. So if you're someone who, you know, maybe you were doing 40Ks a few weeks ago and then you went up to 42 and 45 and now you've hit 50 and you're really wanting to see that Strava graph just slowly increase, but you also want to increase your exposure to fast running. If you're doing both of those things at the same time, increasing your training volume and increasing your training intensity, it's a little bit more risky. If we can just change one variable at a time, that's going to be a much safer way to approach this. So if you're increasing your speed, I would suggest reducing or at the minimum just maintaining your training volume, your duration, or your distance. Cool. Hopefully that came across clearly. So coming back to these tempo runs, as I just gave an example there, that was a really short, probably a not very traditional tempo run session for elite athletes. And what you might see online or what you might see in the research is that tempo runs are your 40 to 60 minute effort pace. Now, of course, in the example I just gave you, it's only 9 minutes worth of running. But I think when we're introducing this for beginners, this is a really nice way to do it in shorter bouts. From there, we can start to progress things. And there are an endless amount of ways that you could progress that session. So let's take that, for example, three lots of 3 minutes with 2 minutes rest in between. Is that even what I said? Now I don't know. Maybe it was 2 minutes. I think it was 2 minutes. Okay, let's stick with the 2 minutes. It was 3 by 2 minutes, 1 minute rest in between. Now we can progress the duration. So we could make it 3 minutes. We could make it 4 minutes, 5 minutes, 6, etc. We could increase the frequency, so we could do more repeats of that 2 minute effort. We could go to 4, 6, 8, 10, lots of 2 minute efforts. We could, what else could we do? Duration, frequency. That's probably it for now. So we can basically just increase the total volume that we're spending at that pace. Now, what you'll start to do then is as the duration of these efforts increases, you won't increase the duration and the frequency necessarily, but what we want to start to think about is building towards a run that we will be more continuous. So if we can start building towards a 20-minute continuous run, let's say, for example, we've got this 3 lots of 2 minutes, we've then progressed to 3 lots of 3 minutes, 3 lots of 4 minutes, we're now at 12 minutes. Maybe we then go into 2 lots of 6 to see how we handle those slightly longer efforts, but still the same total duration. We could then go to 2 lots of 8, making 16, and then finally 2 lots of 10, that's 20 minutes. Hopefully you're with me now. 2 lots of 10 makes 20. Then we go to a 20-minute continuous run after a couple of those 10-minute runs, and now suddenly we're able to sustain a really nice tempo effort over a slightly longer duration. Now we've only really increased it very slightly over a number of training sessions and a number of training weeks, but now we're able to comfortably, or I shouldn't say comfortably because it should be slightly uncomfortable if we're in the right training zone, but we're able to safely manage doing a 20-minute continuous tempo run. And from here, we can simply increase that duration over time, slowly working our way up towards that 60-minute, depending on what our training goal is. Of course, if you're training for a 5K, then running at tempo pace for 60 minutes is probably not relevant for you, but if you're doing a marathon, it might be more relevant in that situation. So individuality, nuance, variables, there's a lot to it. And this is why having a coach is very important. Send me a message if you would like some information on that. So that's our tempo runs. That's one way to go about it. Introducing some zone 3 efforts, something a little bit quicker than zone 2, but not crazy. Another way to look at it, and I would again keep these separate. So don't take on that tempo advice plus what I'm going to talk about now at the same time. I would only take on one thing at once. And I would also only, same thing with medical advice, seek professional help. Don't just do what I've just told you. I don't know your individual situation. I have no idea on your injury history, training age, goals, anything like that. So don't just do my random 3 by 2 minute session that I've just said just because you heard it on the podcast. Message me if you want some clarification on what you should do for where you're at. I'd be happy to help. But option number 2 is introducing some strides. And this is something that really I guess appreciated more when I was training with Tim Locke and he introduced me to some more structured strides that I hadn't really done. You know, I'd done them sporadically. I would often use strides as a bit of a shakeout run before a race. I would use them as a bit of a warm-up before an interval track session, but I never really did a run kind of focused on strides necessarily. So before we get too into it, a stride is simply just a fast, short burst of running. So think about kind of a 20, 30, 45, 60 second effort, focusing on good form, moving smooth, moving well, moving fast, not completely gassing yourself and sprinting as hard as you can, but just moving at a faster intensity. Because the duration is so short, you should be able to move relatively quickly compared to our tempo efforts that would be a little bit longer. So the reason for introducing strides, if you're someone who's planning on introducing some faster running, is it's a nice way to expose your body to the mechanics of running faster. It's a nice way to expose your cardiovascular, physiological systems to running quickly, but it's not quite long enough. The duration isn't quite there for you to really break down and for it to be a really big load on the body. So when we are introducing faster work, we know that we need a little bit more recovery time. We might end up a little bit tighter, a little bit more sore than we would from our easy runs. So introducing some strides is a nice way to just kind of sprinkle in a little bit of intensity, but not overwhelm the body and end up doing too much too soon. So what does this actually look like? Let's take that runner we just spoke about, the 4 times a week easy jogging, 1 long run, 1 medium run, 2 easy runs. In one of those short easy runs, could we start introducing some strides here? So same as before, where we had the tempo efforts in the middle, we're still going to have our 10-minute warm-up and cool-down. I think that's really important, especially when you're starting to do some faster runs, is making sure that you spend a little bit of time doing an easy jog before you go straight into the fast stuff. But in that middle 10-minute block, we could start introducing some 20-second bursts of faster effort. So we might have sprinkled in there 5 lots of 20 seconds, and in between, I don't know what the maths is, but it would be, you know, 1:40 or 2 minutes, depending on how many repeats you're doing, of easy jogging in between. Okay, so you've got your 10-minute warm-up, you do 20 seconds at this faster effort. This would be, I was going to say zone 4 or zone 5, but it's a little bit harder to measure this intensity in terms of heart rate because the duration is so short. If you're only running for 20 seconds, by the time your heart rate strap has picked up your heart rate, by the time everything's kicked into gear, you're probably going to be almost finished your interval, or you'll probably already finished it, and then your heart rate will start to climb a little bit later. So it's a little bit harder to use heart rate for this specific training method, but just think about a pace. If you know that you're, if you know what your race pace is, you can use that as a bit of a guide as to how fast to run these. Again, it's a little bit hard to know based on where you're at, so having a bit more guidance individually in terms of how fast you're going is very helpful. I will link below a calculator. I'm not sure if I've mentioned it before. I've done this podcast in a few different sittings, so I can't remember exactly what I've said, but there's a calculator below which will help you be guided into which paces you should be using. So you put in a recent race time or a time trial time, and it will spit out some tempo pace, easy pace, VO2 max pace, and that will give you a little bit of a rough guide on maybe where you should start looking at. Obviously, everyone's different, so it might not work for you, but it will give you at least a little bit of guidance there if you're really not sure. So tempo runs and strides would be my two best options for introducing speed work. Again, I wouldn't do them both at the same time. I would suggest doing 4 to 6 weeks of gradually introducing that tempo work first, and then another 4 to 6 weeks of having the strides, or the other way around. I don't personally think there's a right or wrong order of those two, but I just wouldn't go from doing purely easy running into doing both of those. Depending on your training age, if you're someone who's run for 10 years and you've just done easy running the whole time, then maybe you'll have more tolerance and more resilience to changing stresses and changing loads, and maybe you could handle both. But for most cases, I would just start with changing one thing at a time. It's really, really easy to overdo it, and you can always add more, but it's really hard to take it away once you're injured. Cool. So they would be my two key ways of introducing our speed training. The next thing I want to think about, and probably the final major topic, is periodization and when is fast running appropriate. I know I've spoken about how good easy running is and how important fast running is, but should we be doing interval sessions all year round? Should we be running hard every single week forever? No, I don't think so. I think as with everything, we need to have this periodization, which basically just means peaks and troughs throughout the year, periods of time where we are recovering or we've got deload periods, periods of time where we're building or maintaining, and then we're peaking towards a race, we're doing a race, and we're recovering from it. So our years,
our training year, our training months should be undulating. We should have these gradual builds and then these periods of coming back down again. So just as we would with our duration or our weekly kilometers, having this periodization, I think we should also be implementing this with our speed training. So for example, myself recently did an ultra marathon. Majority of that training was long, easy, slow jogging. My goal race pace was probably about 7 minutes per kilometer. But now that I'm training for a half marathon, my goal race pace is more like 4:45, 4:50 pace. So they are totally different stimuluses, totally different goals. Therefore, my training needs to be different. If I trained the same for the ultra marathon as I did for the half marathon, I don't think I would have great results in either. Now, hopefully that's quite obvious to you, but I do think some people get a bit carried away in thinking that their Strava graph has to be a straight line all year round. They have to always do their speed sessions. And I think consistency is fantastic and that's great, but having these fluctuations to our training make it a really nice way to be more sustainable. So, when is an appropriate time to introduce the speed work and how should we structure that throughout the year? Again, it would depend on what you're training for, but what I would always encourage, and maybe we can use Sydney Marathon as an example because I'm sure a lot of you are training for that, or even if you're training for a different marathon later on in the year or earlier, you can still think about the concepts in a similar way. So let's say, for example, we're just over 6 months away from Sydney Marathon. If this is going to be your first marathon or one of your first, I would really encourage a really long period of easy volume foundational building before you add the faster stuff in. So let's say we're in the middle of March right now. I'd be wanting to spend at least till the middle of May, maybe even into the start of June, building a really nice easy base of zone 2 training. From there, we could start to introduce a little bit of these strides. So maybe between late May in towards late June, we've got some strides. We're starting to introduce some 20-second efforts. We're progressing those into 30, 45, into minute-long efforts, adding a little bit more frequency of those throughout the week. And then we can start looking at our more tempo runs, which will be more specific to the marathon, okay? In the marathon, it's very rare, or it would be strange for us to be running at the pace that we would be running our strides at. It's more likely we'll be sitting a little bit closer to that tempo pace for some of the run. So these will be a little bit more relevant. So if we're looking into June, July, into August, this is where we can start to build those tempo runs and have those in there as well. So starting to increase that duration over the training period, increasing the frequency of the reps if we're doing them as intervals, and really starting to get our body used to working at that slightly higher intensity so we can be more efficient, we can clear the lactate more quickly, we can utilize it better, and then we can therefore run at a harder pace or a harder effort for a longer duration. So that's going to be really relevant to our marathon goal. Then you would obviously start peaking, you would have some longer runs in there towards that kind of July, August period. You might have some progression runs in there. That's another way of adding in some speed work and adding in some tempo work. I'd probably encourage that a little bit later. So as I said, sort of July, August, if we're talking about this example, only because you're running faster on heavy, fatigued legs, which can be a little bit challenging. So a progression run for someone who's training for a marathon, let's say they are 3 months out, we could do kind of their midweek long run as a 90-minute run. They might do 30 minutes at a really, really comfortable pace, maybe kind of low zone 2, even tapping into zone 1, depending on what their heart rate's doing, but really comfortable. Then we might do 30 minutes at that higher end of zone 2, something that's getting a little bit quicker, but still comfortable. We might do the final 30 minutes at our tempo pace. So getting the body used to working harder under fatigue is a really nice way to also introduce some speed, but making sure that it's still relevant to our marathon goal in this instance. Cool. All right. I think they're the main things I wanted to cover. I really wanted to, I guess, give you some key takeaways at the end now. So remembering that zone 2 training, easy jogging, is really important as our foundation. I really hope no one walks away from this episode thinking, oh, Sophie thinks zone 2 is stupid. She thinks it's a waste of time. She thinks every run should be hard. That is not what I'm saying at all. And hopefully that was quite clear. I'm sure it will be. I think I've repeated myself enough to make sure that it will be. But if you're not sure, send me a message, we can chat about it. But basically, zone 2 running is your priority. Easy jogs are so important. We need that as our base. But when we're starting to look to progress, we want to get a bit faster. We need to start introducing some speed work in a safe, controlled, progressive manner. We know the benefits for it physiologically, mechanically, psychologically for our race preparation. We know how to do it, introducing some short strides, something really just sprinkling a little bit of speed work in, maybe adding in some tempo runs that are a little bit faster than our easy pace, but not our all-out sprint. And then beyond that, which I haven't really mentioned, which I probably should before I wrap it up, is the actual interval training itself. So we've got tempo runs, we've got strides, but what about actual intervals? Now, there's so many different variables that you could play around with here. What I want you to think about is with your tempo runs, if you're doing them as intervals, I would encourage you to have about half of the rest time as the tempo run time. So if you did a 6 minute tempo run times three, so 6 minutes of running repeated three times, I would encourage you to have about 3 minutes jogging in between to recover to then repeat the next effort. When you're moving in towards more of our harder paced interval running, I would encourage more rest, because if you think about it, your heart rate is going to be much higher, your body's working much harder at these higher paces into more towards our VO2 max type effort. So we need more recovery time in order to make sure our heart rate comes down so that we can then perform at the same effort or intensity in the next rep. There's no point going out at 4 minute pace for your first effort, having a little bit of recovery time, going again, only getting to 4:15 pace, recovering quickly, going again, 4:20 pace, and you just end up getting slower and slower. If we've got a goal pace in mind, we need to make sure that we're able to hit that pace, recover from it, and repeat it again. So you might need to play around with the variables. There are a lot of different things that you can play around with, but I think rest time is something that's often not thought about or overlooked or not considered. And often when we are training to a distance, people aren't really thinking about it so much. So you might do, let's say, if you're in a group, there might be 10 lots of 400 meters and you might all have 90 seconds rest. So for someone who does a 400 meter effort in 90 seconds, that's fantastic. If they're working at their VO2 max pace, they've got a 1-to-1 rest to work ratio. They're resting as long as they're running for. But for someone who might take 2:30 for that, and they're only getting 90 seconds rest, they're probably not going to be able to recover as well. So if you are in a group setting, that's just something to consider, working to time versus working to distance, or maybe just adjusting your rest time based on how long that distance takes you. So rest time is really important for our interval training. Our intensity is really important. So how hard are we running and how do we know how hard to run? Once we've moved beyond strides and tempo, we're now into our serious interval training now. We need to be working quite hard. We should be breathless. We shouldn't be able to chat. Often I'll see people at interval sessions just chatting along while they're in the hard part of the effort. And while that's lovely and it's nice to be social, it's good to chat, they're not really getting out of it what they could be getting out of it. So making sure you're working hard, you're getting puffed, you should get to the end and feel like you're ready to have a recovery period and then go again. In terms of how much to do, how often to do, again, keeping in that roughly 80-20, 70-30 zone. If you're running three times a week, having two easy runs and one faster run. If you're running four times a week and you've spent some time doing the tempos and the strides, you could have two purely easy runs, you could have one tempo run, and you could have one faster interval session. That might be a nice way to structure it. So you've got most of your time or half of your time at zone two, then you've got a quarter of your time at zone three, a quarter of your time at zone four or zone five. That could be a good way to do it. Of course, it's going to depend how many sessions you're doing. In terms of the actual interval sessions themselves, they can be anywhere from 30 seconds, a minute, 200 meters, all the way up to 400, 600, 800, a K, a mile, 2Ks, 3Ks. It is seriously endless the amount of options you have with interval training. So it can be a little bit confusing and it can be a little bit complicated, but I would think about what your goal is. If you're running a 5K, doing some shorter efforts at a faster pace is going to be beneficial. If you're running a marathon, running longer efforts, so more like 800 meters, a kilometer, a mile, maybe some 2K tempo efforts is going to probably be more relevant for you. If you're running a 10K, you might be somewhere in the middle, 400 meters, 800 meters, somewhere around there. But it really depends on your phase of training. It depends on your history and so many other factors. So I know I'm being a bit vague. I know I'm not just giving you a program to follow, because it's just not that simple, and that would be naive and that would be very silly and dangerous. So if you need some help with your program, if you're feeling a bit confused, if you're not sure where to start with interval training, please reach out to me. I'd love to chat to you about it. I would happily write you a program or even just answer some questions over Instagram, or we can jump on a phone call and have a chat about it. I would love to give some individual advice to anyone who's a little bit confused in this space. But to wrap things up, keep your easy runs easy. slowly introduce some speed work when you're ready for it and when your body can handle it and when it's appropriate. Make sure once you're able to that your hard runs are actually hard, so you're getting enough out of it to make it worthwhile, but making sure you're also spending some good recovery time between those harder efforts and you're not backing up hard session after hard session. You've still got your easy runs throughout the week, you've still got some rest days, you've still got some lighter days, some cross training or some swimming to make sure that you're recovering well. Getting in your sleep, nutrition, and what's the other one? Sleep, nutrition. Is there not three big things we should be doing? Sleep, nutrition, running? I don't know. Anyway, get to bed early and do all the good things. And what else should I tell you? There's so many things. I know that was a lot, but hopefully you got a little bit of background knowledge. You got a little bit of practical takeaways, but I really want to make sure that you ask questions, reach out to me if you've got any individual questions that you need answering, and hopefully I can help you. Okay, I'm rambling now. I'm going to wrap this up. Thank you so much for listening. Please rate us 5 stars, follow us on Instagram, share us on your story. It really means so much to us and we appreciate it so much. Thanks, team. We will chat to you next week.